Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, Episode 2. The TNG Pilot, Encounter at Farpoint.
Star Trek. The next generation is beaming aboard the airwaves. All the wonder, the excitement, the drama of Gene Roddenberry's original space odyssey.
Welcome to the Enterprise.
With all-new adventures from the 24th century. With an all-new Enterprise.
This is nothing like any vessel I've seen before.
And an all-new crew. Starfleet veteran Captain Picard. Commander Riker. Executive Officer. Chief Medical Officer Crusher. And her brilliant son, Wesley. Lieutenant Commander Data, an android. The telepathic Troy. Security Officer Yar. Geordi, a man with unique vision. And Klingon Officer Worf.
Shields and deflectors up, sir.
Go to yellow alert.
Their continuing mission, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Let's see what's out there.
Don't miss the all-new television adventures of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
What's that guy's name? Jason Sudeikis? Wasn't he in that, he was in that show, Son of Zorn? You remember that show, Son of Zorn, with, Cheryl Hines? And
he was
Tim,
on the show?
Tim Meadows.
Weird. What are you talking about?
Son of Zorn.
Jason Sudeikis?
He played the voice of Zorn.
Cheryl Hines.
Wasn't Cheryl Hines in the Larry David show?
Yeah, Curb Your Enthusiasm? Curb Your Enthusiasm.
What does that have to do with Encounter at Farpoint?
Well, the Son of Zorn was this, I think it only lasted a season, but it was one of those shows where everyone was a real actor except for Zorn, which was a cartoon character, and the voice was, and he was like a He-Man character, and it was like a funny comedy, you know, he was like a family man, trying to be a family man.
I like Jason how you're bringing something up we can all immediately comment on.
Well, I was just saying, because that was the name of the main, would you even call him a villain?
I don't know if you call him Grappler Zorn.
Played
Michael
by
Bell.
Michael
That's
Bell.
Grappler Zorn. Yeah, yeah. What else is he got his ass tortured. Mm-hmm. He deserved it too.
He did get his ass tortured.
Jesse was just saying that it was a fluffy episode.
There was no real message to this episode.
It's sort of like there's a lot of cool parts to that episode, and it's sort of like they took an episode and they stretched it out over two episodes, and they gave you a bunch of stuff to show you like what the new Enterprise could do.
Right.
Like,
and one thing that's different is the episode begins. It's one of those begin at the beginning kind of shows where it's like Picard is on his brand new ship, meeting his brand new crew. So it was kind of like, where's the other, where the cage and where no man has gone before began like sort of
medias res.
Yeah.
Is that a term? Is there a name for that or something?
Yeah, in the middle of the action.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Encounter Farpoint like match up with All Good Things, though, as far as continuity? Because he's coming up on the shuttle. So you see him before, because in the first scene
in All Good Things, you do see him before he gets on the ship. But I think there are a couple other things that are weird to begin with.
Yeah.
First of all, there's no teaser. It goes straight in. It's the credits.
Right.
Yeah.
And the credits are like, and then there's like these weird extra credits, you know, before the actual story starts. So it has the opening credits.
Yeah.
And then it has these weird extra credits where the stars are moving backwards for some reason. They're like moving the opposite way you'd expect. And there's that really weird, it's a cool shot, but it's the shot where all of a sudden like you're like coming up from underneath the Enterprise D and it goes all slowly, you know, over. So you like are looking into the bridge. And
you're talking about the cage.
No. I'm talking about Encounter at Farpoint. You don't look into the bridge a la the cage, although now that you bring it up, it is kind of similar in a sense, except it's not all
it's
like
not
skewed
as jarring
from the side.
And weird.
It's all like moving slowly, and it shows all these extra credits at the beginning. And then when the credits are done, then it slowly pans up, almost like a, you know, sort of like a New Hope or something. And then suddenly you see the saucer section of the Enterprise. Like you sort of see the Enterprise from below, and then you like come up over the saucer section.
It's trippy. It's sort of like 2001, kind of.
Well, it is. It's weird.
And then, it's got this kind of vibe, yeah.
And then also for the first shot with Picard in it, that first shot, that was like a weird shaky
silhouette.
It is.
When he's showing on the turbo lift.
It was like a shaky cam shot.
Oh, yeah.
A la, like, like some other, I don't know.
I noticed that as well. When he goes into engineering, it's like this weird handheld shot that's all like weirdly shaky. That happens later when Wesley's on the bridge, when you're like looking from Wesley's perspective, all like shaky cam again.
When it's from Wesley's perspective, that looks like a perfect like scene for like some kind of Star Trek CD-ROM interactive
CD-ROM
game.
Yeah, exactly that.
It's like, welcome to the bridge. Would you like to...
Here is the seat.
Yeah, and Card's all like looking at the camera, which is Wesley. That's interesting. Those are two like weird out of place shots.
Yeah, there's a few of them in this episode. But one of the key things I thought watching it, it's sort of broken in half, which makes sense because they knew that it was going to be divided in half to be a two-parter later. But the first half has a real TOS feel to it. Like the writing and the dialogue and sort of the staging is really, I need to look in my notes and see if I have specific examples, but just the vibe of it was really felt like you're on the old Enterprise and it's this bizarre story about, you know, Q, this magical being just materializes looking like a Napoleonic soldier. It was very TOS. But once you get into the second half and you have Riker, you start following Riker and Geordi and Crusher, all of a sudden the vibe is different. It's more like what we come to think of as TNG, that sort of casual.
And he actually, style. And Riker actually watches the recap. You know, like the first episode.
Yeah, that's weird as shit.
And I always thought that was weird because sort of like on the Menagerie, they make the point like nobody keeps records like this. You know, but then I guess by the Next Generation, they did keep records.
Yeah,
like
I thought that was kind of bizarre, like sort of like, yeah, a weird way to put a review in the first episode, because the shot was strange, too, because it like showed like a TV style conversation of like what happened previously. And then the last shot of that shot is like the cue ball flying through space.
It's like, how did he see
like,
that?
Where's that camera?
Why are those people helping?
Yeah, right.
It's like he's watching the first episode.
Right.
You know?
That's, yeah.
He's watching what we just watched.
Well, I if you watch the episode again, that's the thing to pay attention to is look at the vibe of the dialogue, because the dialogue really, especially with Geordi, and of course Crusher and, you know, Wesley Crusher and his mom, it's more casual communications, more casual way of talking. And I don't mean that they're not acting like military people. It's just more, It's less like, here we go, we're in space, we're doing missions. It's more like, hey, oh, that fabric looks nice, and isn't this a strange occurrence? I like apples.
That's peculiar.
I like that when they call fabric like bolts.
Yes, fabric. I mean, that's a normal term.
It's normal, but it feels so like old school.
Bolt
like,
of fabric,
like I should,
but it's
like
new
casting
school.
Magic
it comes back. It comes back in
comes
the future.
And the future is the past.
It's 300 years. In 300 years, that's the hip way thing to call it.
It's like Battlestar Galactica.
Exactly. We look forward. We look back to look forward. Mm-hmm. You got to go back to in order to go forward. You got to go forward in order to go back.
So does the yeah.
You know
it's
what
like
I'm
so
saying?
So much on the right, you're on the left.
Exactly. You go if you keep walking to the right far enough, you're on the left.
You're on the left.
Encounter at 4 point. Take two.
Take three.
So
encountered.
So it's because I hadn't watched that episode in like many years. So I watched. On Netflix, it just shows the continuous like one and two together. It doesn't really divide them. So I guess
the break
I would guess would be
when
like,
DeForest Kelly's on.
When
that's what I was
okay, right? Yes. When they walk down the hallway.
And then the next scene is Riker
going. Yeah, in. The second episode starts. The second part is when
Riker all comes on the bridge.
I've seen it on TV a bunch of times.
Is DeForest Kelly looks really frail?
He's 137 years old.
So
I mean, like I'm talking about the actor himself, though. I mean,
when I was a kid,
you're saying DeForest Kelly himself is actually
he was acting like an old guy.
Well, he was, but I mean,
he
physically looks so.
It was 1987. So he wasn't dead yet, obviously.
Right.
It was a stupid thing to say.
He looked older than he looked.
He was made up to look old.
True, true.
But here's the problem, and I remember this bothered me as a child as well. Because I watched the animated series, and I watched TOS, and then I got super into TNG, like mega into TNG. And I remember watching that and seeing McCoy and thinking, oh, this is cute. This is nice. This is a good way to hand off the torch and all that. but what the fuck was with that accent?
Yeah.
Because he was talking like he was some kind of like
good old boy.
Good old boy moron. He wasn't using his McCoy accent.
He reminded me of what's his name from Guardians of the Galaxy, the blue dude who was Star-Lord's
always
like,
bring you home, son.
Like, he's always been like, hey, boy, come on, boy. Well, what are you doing, boy?
He turned into like a crazy old man or something. Yeah.
That's probably
what but I don't know if you get older that you start talking like, hey, boy.
Well,
yeah, what the hell?
You ain't got no Vulcanium. See no points on them ears, but
I don't see any points on them.
Although that almost as bad joke was a good joke.
Maybe he retired back to Georgia.
It was, some of the rest of it. One issue.
He was from Georgia.
I like the cameo. I don't blame them for the cameo. I think it's fine. I wouldn't remove it. But it is problematic partly because, unlike an example that I'll bring up when we do our Star Trek Discovery pilot podcast, in which the exposition is terrible. And I really like Discovery, and I like a lot about the first couple episodes of Discovery. It's just the exposition is terrible. Here, for the most part, except for one caveat, one exception, they're really good at getting the exposition out artfully and organically. So, and by exposition, I mean like the information you need, especially because it's the first episode and you need certain things like, you know, clarified.
How old was DeForest Kelly? Like,
I don't know. It was the year after Voyage Home. So, you know,
he was born in 1920. That's crazy. So he was
an old guy.
Well, he's 67. So he looked really, like, when I say frail, I don't just mean makeup. Like, he looks slight. Like, his frame was really slight. Like, not makeup. That's like his body.
He's an older guy. Maybe he was riddled with horrible cancer.
Well, he 67. Died 12 years later.
He was 67.
Old people were older back then.
That's true. That's a good point.
But he looked better. He did look less...
I think DeForest
frail in Undiscovered Country. He looked a lot less frail in Undiscovered Country. I think it's just because he's playing an old guy. It really is that simple.
Well, but I was even looking at his like thighs and his
well, who was I was too. I was looking him up and down.
He may
too.
Have been the oldest.
Boy, I don't see any. I don't see any points on those ears, but I'll give you a kiss right on the mouth.
Exactly.
He's probably the oldest cast member.
I mean, the scene I wouldn't take it out, right? But of course, without DeForest Kelly, if it was just some random dude, it's an absolutely pointless scene.
Well, yeah, wasn't he also transferring back to the Hood or something?
Yeah, that was another thing. I didn't know what the Hood was.
It didn't really.
The Hood
was
another ship.
That was the ship that Riker was rendezvousing.
But why would they call it
rendezvousing?
Why, like,
rendezvousing?
When they call it the Hood, like, was that the official name of the ship?
Yeah, that's the ship.
Ship.
Like the USS.
But what I didn't
like the USS the Hood.
USS Hood.
I think there wasn't it an aircraft carrier called the Hood, or was it a battleship? We have real ship called the Hood.
Okay,
but the point was they threw DeForest Kelly in there.
General Hood.
I didn't really even understand. Like, I had to rewind it to try to understand. Oh, he's going from the Enterprise.
It was, but that's my point. That's my point. Is that is one out of two examples of bad exposition in the show. And by bad exposition, I mean they're trying to do something and they had to force it in.
Yeah,
it was obviously forced because I was like, why is
it's
he even there?
It's confusing and his accent's weird. And it's kind of like the point is to hand the baton off.
Right.
Right.
I don't know if they successfully accomplished
that. Well, they did a lot better with Relics when they did Scotty later on.
Yeah.
You know, and
but
even
that was,
within Generations.
Thought out and all that. But the thing is so other examples of good exposition is, for example, when Tasha Yar wants to do something about Q and she says, as security chief, I can't stand by here and let somebody, you know, invade the bridge. Right.
Right.
That's an example of you now know she's the security chief. You wouldn't know that otherwise. Or when Picard says, let's see what this galaxy-class starship can do.
Oh,
and then
now
you know it's a galaxy-class.
And when they separated the ship, the saucer part, and like Picard told Worf to like fly away with the ship, and he's like, I was a Klingon warrior. Yes. I can't leave my captain.
As a Starfleet officer, you know?
Yeah, right. It's like, these are the battles between
and
Klingon
they,
and Starfleet.
Well, with Geordi, they did the same thing with his eyes, and they explained
that. Well, also I think that's a good example, too.
Yeah.
The other bad example, or at least the only other one that jumped out, for me, besides the DeForest Kelly one, was the whole thing where Riker comes on board, Picard makes him do the saucer, you know, reconnect thing, and everything's fine.
Manually, right.
Yeah. And Riker, you know, calls Riker into the office, you know, they're talking, and they have this nice little conversation about blah, 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 da, da, da,
I think I know what you might be
saying. And then Picard's all like, okay, I'm going to rely on you to, like, protect me around, make sure I'm not making a fool around children.
It was...
And it's like, wait, what?
Where that came out of left field.
It was,
right.
It was a weird transition it from was, like yeah. him saying, oh, so you defy captain's orders. You have no respect for yes. the chain of command. He's like, I respect the chain of command, but I respect the captain's life even more. He's like, you stand by and that? He's like, yes, I do. Well, then I have one more thing to ask for you.
And he tells him something very vulnerable.
He says, yeah. don't make me look stupid in front of children. Can you stand up to that task? You know,
and it's true.
Part of what annoys me about that is the scene feels, that part of the scene feels forced and weird and yes. out of left field. But more importantly, it's completely unnecessary because they're obviously just about to set up Picard being annoyed with Wesley, which doesn't make any sense because when there's that whole thing where like, uh-oh, Picard doesn't like kids on the bridge, that's not unusual.
Yeah, that's
there's nothing wrong with that. That's a perfectly reasonable attitude for any person, particularly an authoritative, you know,
He could love children and not want them on the bridge.
Yeah, right? It doesn't make any sense why they would need to add in this bizarre like character trait that Picard is like has some sort of like mental breakdown around children.
Yeah, yeah.
And they try to come back to it later in the episode Disaster, you know, where they're having Picard
there. He's on the elevator with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And they're acting as if they're acting as if Picard's a total asshole because he's kind of like bored dealing with these kids. It's like, yeah, it's nicer if he's not, but in that case he's totally fine with the kids, and I guess that's sort of the point of that episode. But it's like, you know, he clearly never actually had an issue with children. He immediately gets along with Wesley, you know, after
he's got that
after
nephew, he's all cool with that guy.
Yeah, he digs his nephew. It's a weird thing that just sort of was inserted there, and you're like, why is this here? It's a little overdone.
I see what you're saying. Well, they also kind of do it in Inner Light, where he's like, I couldn't imagine my life with children. But even that's sort of the kind of thing any guy could say if so it's, you're right. It's sort of like they didn't really need to have that, and they threw that in there.
Well, do you want to talk about exposition? What about
why did they do that?
What about
why did they do that?
What about like the way Riker treated Geordi when they introduced Geordi to the show? He treated him like kind of like a bitch.
Yeah,
like,
he was like, "You better fucking be formal, motherfucker."
Yeah, right. So they established right there that Geordi is like kind of like, I don't know.
You think that was a racist thing?
No, I didn't.
Like, no. You think that he was just?
But almost everybody seems to take an immediate liking to Data.
Yes. Yeah, but like, do you
although
think it was
Riker was
of
an asshole to Data, not an asshole. He was like mildly, like sort of like comically racist towards him.
A little bit, but then, but he quickly warms up to Data.
But it's I know this was the point. I'm not criticizing the dialogue. It actually works very well, especially in the context of the 80s. But if you replace the dialogue between Data and Riker on the holodeck with like Data's just like an Italian guy, you know, Data's all like, do you expect something different because I'm an Italian guy? And Riker's like, well, honestly, yes.
Pinocchio?
Yes, I did.
He calls him Pinocchio at the end.
And he does call him Pinocchio.
Yeah, that'd even be funnier.
They play it as like Data's kind of put off by it. But I mean, it's like a weird thing to say.
Interesting.
What's up with like the whole like, you know, Data throwing the rock at the wall in the holodeck room
to
like,
show the holodeck?
Yeah, right. I know. Okay. But here's the deal. Like, why? You know, it's the classic. Like, I know. I don't think
they're showing you what the Enterprise.
I don't think
does.
It's nitpicky to say, how did they know not to run into that wall? How can Data can throw? How come he can throw a rock at the wall and it hits like 2 feet away, but they can't
silly.
Run into it?
Right.
I don't think that's nitpicky. Is
one
that
of
nitpicky?
The
you know,
one of the greatest problems. Now, many people out there will disagree with this, justifiably. But in my view, having recently rewatched the entire first season of The Next Generation,
I'm going to start over.
One of the greatest problems is that all these people act as if the holodeck is this fucking miracle thing, and like I know that's what they were trying to start out with, but then like almost immediately it's like, no, it's like, of course everyone, of course there's a holodeck. And then obviously in other series and stuff they had different versions, and there was even an implication that they had something like that on the original series. They just never did it.
Enterprise, I think they had a scene.
Enterprise had
a like
simulator
some space
kind
alien.
Of thing.
Well, yeah, they had a space, they went to some space alien place to get their ship fixed.
But the whole first season, every time they go to the holodeck, every time people, it's like wow. You know what it's like? It's like back in the 50s when people got on an airplane and they wore like a suit and tie.
Oh, right.
And like a nice dress and a hat and they were very formal. That's how they treat the holodeck. They're like, all right, motherfuckers, we got to plan this shit out. This is going to blow our fucking minds.
Yeah.
Wesley's all like, you see these goddamn ferns? This is only one of thousands of patterns.
Yeah.
Also, prior to that holodeck scene, that one officer was showing Riker how futuristic this ship was and how state-of-the-art it was. It was like, yeah. Look, you can ask where Data is, and it'll tell you exactly where he is.
How would he
and
not
see
know
these,
that?
And see these dots on the wall? It'll point you in the direction of the hallway, which how to
was
get to
that
him.
Was that the chick that was like checking him out when he walked
in? Yeah, and yes, he looked at his butt.
She looks at his butt, yeah.
She's that's, all like, mmm.
That was some Spaceball shit right there.
It really was.
It's like, mmm, President Screw.
Well, they also
looked down
had,
at his penis.
The other,
I don't know why it's doing this.
The other Spaceballs one is kind of Spaceballs. Mm-hmm. Actually, not even. I don't know. It's just funny because like when there's that one scene with Q on the bridge early on, and then at the end of it, he says so. I don't even remember what he says, but then the camera all goes like and like zooms like right in on his face, and it's very non Star Trek. It's like not something
it was
you
out
see.
Of left field.
It so, was very odd direction.
Why would they do that?
Well, what was that uniform? It's okay, real quick. It's funny that they call like they refer to the old like
costume,
old uniform as a costume. It's like, well, what the fuck are? Whoa.
He was wearing he was wearing different different captain's uniforms. Like he looked like
he had an army captain,
Columbus or something.
Well, there was one where he had that big.
It was like a marine captain.
So wait, what was the one where they had like drugs on hand? The uniform with that weird black uniform.
They just made that up for the episode.
Yeah,
that was some future police.
So in the year right around now, that's about to happen in the next 5 years.
Yeah, the mid-20th
century. Well, when they had those trials things.
Yeah, that's around now.
The guards were wearing that.
And they'll just blatantly give him a little pouch of cocaine on there.
They said that was like the 2070s. 2070s, was that what they said?
The 2079.
Mid-20th.
You know what? They actually said 2087 was a date they used, and that's like would have been
they said
after first contact.
No, so what Data did is Data during the court, he tried to like cite some precedent of the year 2036, and he's like, Q was like, but this is the court of 2079. So
79.
That's why your precedent doesn't work.
That's when you turn 100.
It's the post-atomic horror.
But the point is that was after the Vulcans made contact is when this trial thing was happening.
When did the Vulcans make?
But also there were other like things like they said.
I think they kind of changed it up.
They changed it up because like I think Riker said or Data says he was classes of like, you know, 87 or something like that. But that wouldn't have really made any sense if the show is taking place in 2364.
Yeah.
So there's little continuities like that. And I'm fine with that.
Well, and then there's inconsistencies are one thing, and then there are some of the bizarre, possibly cocaine-fueled production and design choices, particularly with the trial scene. Because first of all, post-atomic horror, gotcha.
But why does
the post-atomic horror result in everyone going back to like medieval and Renaissance like
everything?
Not. And by the way, it's not like just one guy had like a Renaissance. They were all dressed like medieval peasants and or Renaissance middle class merchant class people.
Yeah.
Except for like those Judge Dredd cops, which had like gun hands. They looked like Mega Man.
And they were
completely anachronistic to the crowd.
Right.
And then, furthermore, definitely racist to have what appeared to be a Chinese man
with a
Fu Manchu mustache. Yeah. And then, was already racist. Then to have a little person who did not appear to be Chinese, but is made up to look Chinese to ring the bell.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't make, because it's like, okay, they're Chinese people, Asian people survived the post-atomic horror. Fantastic. But for some reason, they dress like medieval, you know, Chinese warlords.
I think there's going to be there's some fan fiction that explains this somewhere. All of that.
And then the little person. And then the little person.
Even that.
He gave a funny little look at one point, like, towards the end of the trial stuff. Like, he was all like, it was like, it was mildly shady.
That's bizarre. Yeah, you know what? I didn't even know. See, that's why you talk about these things, because I didn't even notice how fucked up that stuff was.
I thought the line where Q said, where he says, bringing the innocent to trial would be unfair. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was.
That was like kind of an interesting twist on the, innocent until proven guilty. And he's like, guilty until proven innocent. Why would you bring innocent people to trial?
Yeah, because the earlier line was, the prisoners will not be harmed until they are found guilty.
Right. Yeah. Yes, trickery. Trickery. It's always comical when they have like robots like try to imitate human voices, like when Data plays back the voice of Picard and Q. Now, is that Data imitating their voice, or is he playing a recording he made of their voice?
I think it's both.
Because, like, why is he moving his mouth? It just, the whole thing is really awkward.
I think
that's
he's doing an impression,
decision.
But it's exactly how they a recording would have sounded.
So he has to move his mouth. So he has to move his mouth because, like, he's doing the impression, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, he can, like, remember everything perfectly, and he can impersonate anybody on the ship. So what he was doing was he was just like basically giving a vocalized version of his memory.
Yeah.
Using their voices.
It's always such a goofy choice.
And it was also a form of exposition because they're trying to
explain what Data's capable
of. All of Data's capabilities.
Yeah, true.
Right? That's one reason why he lifted that big rock, for example. Like, it wasn't that big, but you know, it's kind of showing the things that he can withstand and the strength he has. Like, there's that hilarious part where he's knocked over, like once they go down to Farpoint.
Yeah.
And then he just like sits up all like from
it's
the
like,
middle.
It's like the Undertaker from WWE.
And then he has that weird exchange where like Riker is all like, "Oh, I'm fine. How about you, Data?" And Data's all like looking around. And then he was like, you know, like, "I'm fully operational." Yeah. And then he gives all this systems. Weird little look.
And then Riker's just like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah. Riker's like, "This guy is a piece of shit." Yeah.
Well, Data was creepy throughout the whole thing, especially that like holodeck scene at the beginning. Like when he lifts Wesley up above his head.
That was bizarre.
And the weird smile.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Marvelous." When he like fucking whistling. Like the whole thing is really fucking.
Well, that was
you're a
like,
young boy.
It feels like Data.
That was the episode before he has sex with Tasha Yar, so maybe he wasn't sure if he was into young boys or women yet.
Well, it feels like he's going to be one of those androids.
You got to edit that part out. Like, what I just said.
No, absolutely not.
It feels like he's going to be like one of those one of those androids that just suddenly decides to like go evil and like fuck people up or something.
And he does occasionally.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you never know, cuz it was a brand new sci-fi. I mean, people knew the Star Trek brand, but
brand
they didn't
new
know
sci-fi.
But yeah, do you know what, like that episode, I was surprised at how good it was, because you know, you think of season one as being kind of hokey, and
there's ups and downs, but I just watched them all, and I don't think there were any that were unwatchable. There were some that were sort of boring,
right?
But Encounter at Farpoint's not bad.
It was well, I went into it thinking like, why am I even bothering, you know, watching this? Well, you, I mean, I did for this podcast, obviously, but whenever I think of like, I'm gonna watch some Next Generation, which happens to me pretty often, I never put on Farpoint because I'm like, oh god, I don't want to watch that. But then I watched it, I'm like, you know, it's not bad television.
No, it's not bad.
It's really
at all.
Not.
It's like not my favorite, but it's not bad.
Yeah,
there's lots of good little bits in there.
I was surprised at how much I was actually entertained by it, not because I thought I was gonna watch it just to refresh my memory. I've seen it like four or five times over my whole life. And I was like, just watching it, I was going to force myself to sit through it, but I was actually
I was actually enjoying watching.
You know, I was enjoying the process.
Next time, I'm going to come over and watch you watch it.
Yeah, you better watch me watch it. Watch me watch it.
Yeah, there's definitely worse episodes. It's fine episode. It's just basically introduction stuff. I don't remember if it was during a I went to a Star Trek convention once where Patrick Stewart was the speaker.
Oh, you saw him?
And I don't remember if it was there or if it was a documentary you saw, but apparently that separation of the disc from the rest of the Enterprise is like a really expensive special effect.
Really?
The guy was like, I know it doesn't look expensive, but it's really freaking expensive, which is why we didn't do it.
It also, the other problem is that the Star Drive, that's a stupid name, that section of the non-saucer part.
They never use that.
It looks really silly. And I know. We should be scientists. We should think only of the functionality, and it's fantastic functionality. But it looks really silly without the saucer.
So and that battle bridge.
Oh, it does.
The battle bridge
is zipping around.
It's got a little tiny view screen.
I was like, why is there's no reason for the view screen to be smaller on the battle bridge?
Right,
it's not like
the battle bridge.
It's not the budget bridge. It's not the you go to your room because you were bad, so you have to watch the small TV.
Yeah, right.
You know? Yeah, you'd need a bigger screen. You would think.
Yeah,
it's a big map.
It's a battle.
It's a battle. Map.
Why
does
like Tasha Yar have like less access to the consoles and stuff back there? You'd think she'd need more because she's, you know.
Other than Best of Both Worlds, what are there any episodes that they really use the battle bridge? I mean, they don't really use it that
often.
No,
think of anything.
No, they because
I know in the Borg one they use it.
Yeah,
do they?
But I remember
it's a couple times, but they don't always separate.
Do they separate? Oh, they didn't.
They don't always separate.
They did separate.
No, they did. They separate
in
Best of Both Worlds for sure. Yeah.
Do they ever use the battle bridge in conjunction with like the regular bridge?
I don't think they ever use it unless they separate.
Unless they separate.
Yeah, in theory.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, I don't remember seeing the battle bridge. other than the first episode. And
it's
then
sort
the,
of a silly idea.
Well, yeah. For them to separate in the first place, I mean, was it really worth the risk? You know, like, it was kind of like, well, that was a lot of, like, he said himself, it's like, we can either, like, get fucked up by Q, or we can, like, do some sneaky shit, yeah, or we can go back to Earth with our tail between our legs. Why didn't he go back to Earth with his tail between our legs? Just to teach Q a lesson?
Well, I think it's like, because he
Data said there was no margin for error. That means one mistake. First of all, like, why would he say no margin of error? There would be at least a little margin for error. But in any case, point being is, like, why would he put the rest of the crew at
risk? The margin Dick for was error, hard. Wasn't that when... was that when they separated, or was that when Riker was putting it back together?
No, that was when they separated.
Yeah, because they were separating at high warp.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
And the saucer section doesn't have warp capability.
But I think the reason that they were taking the risk in the first place was because it was very obvious that Q was going to destroy all of humanity. I mean...
Well, that wasn't obvious, because otherwise they, you know, why do anything, I guess?
I think that...
Because he had the power to do it. It's a story problem, I think.
I'm just saying, like, maybe I'm using my bias from having seen, you know, all 7 years of it and knowing what Q is capable of. But I thought that the fact that he froze Tasha Yar...
No, but he makes the point to Tasha, because Tasha's like, let's shoot at this thing. And Picard is like, are you, like, this? He's done all these magic tricks already, and we're just going to shoot at him? Yeah. That's why he's willing to plead guilty and surrender and all that. That's his strategy. And they do the separation because they want to try to save the families, which makes sense. Yeah, that's fine. It's sensible. It's just, I don't know how well thought out it was. I think it was a holdover. My understanding is that the idea for saucer separation came back almost on the original series. Like, they just kind of said that maybe something that could be done.
I see.
And then when they were doing the Star Trek Phase 2, they were going to be like, we're definitely doing this. It's going to be in the pilot. You know,
like over the 18 years in between.
So
like,
the pilot of that show.
About it. Why didn't they ever separate the goddamn
show? No, I mean, they could have been. I mean, it could have been just the people who wanted to do it. Because I can imagine from a special effects, from a storytelling standpoint, you're like, wouldn't that be cool? We haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah. And it'd be a great way to begin the series to finally have something.
But when you extend it, it's like, all right, we see it. Now what? Are we going to do this like every week? This going to be like the standard thing?
Yeah,
like,
that is good.
It's easier to do a bunch of holodeck episodes.
Yeah. So it's a little...
Yeah, I mean...
It's a little like, what exactly were you going to do over the next... You know, we're going to be on TV for a number of years. What are we going to... How many times are we going to do this? And for what purpose? You know, it's neat.
How many times... I can only think of the saucer section being separated
and then
in
Generations.
Times. And in general, well, that's when the warp core breach happens and they have to.
Okay, which happened more? They separate the saucer, or they set their phasers to kill.
Oh.
Ooh. I think phasers to kill.
Phasers to kill.
Because they're in conspiracy, they have to put their phasers all the way up, and that's just off the top of my head. And aren't there other...
conspiracy the one where they have to, like, fry the dude's face to get the worms out?
Yes. And then there's another episode where, like, there's this chick who is trying to... She's trying to kill this guy who, like, it's an old blood feud from back in the day, and Riker has to put his phaser up to maximum and vaporize her. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Which season is this?
This is a season where there's a woman on board a ship, and this woman is, I'm really doing a bad job with it.
There's a woman on board a ship.
There's a woman.
Guys, let me tell you about this.
Yes, a spaceship.
Lady. All right, I'm going to
look
this up.
She was on the USS Lady.
I'm going to write Riker vaporize woman.
Yes, that's what I was going to do.
What are you talking about?
Are you you know the episode where he has to vaporize?
The Vengeance Factor.
The Vengeance
Factor. Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So is it just me, or did Riker kill Yuta for no good reason?
Yeah. There's a couple times.
Says. But he sets it to maximum to kill, obviously, there. And they did it in Conspiracy where they burned the guy's head off. And then
that shit was nuts.
I mean, are there other seasons? Are there other times where they put their shit on maximum? But probably when they're fighting the Borg, it's on maximum.
Yeah, that's true.
So. Yeah, no, I mean, and there are definitely times where they might not say they're setting it to kill, but that's a fairly safe assumption, like when they're pointing it at some rocks or when they try to do something a couple times and it's not working, so they do it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and there's times, but that's not really to kill, but there's times like where they're in, like, they're trying to survive and shit, and they gotta, like, try it out. Like, what was that episode where... Picard is hurt and he's with Wesley and they're on like the ship, and then there's that asshole who's trying to, like, you know.
Oh yeah, the guy with the water.
Yeah.
And that's the final journey or something.
And he puts his phaser up to the maximum.
Yeah, that's right.
And then
boop, 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 boop.
Not a convincing frozen scene for Tasha Yar, I'll say. When they froze her. It's like the thing where they put all the effort. She put all the effort into upper body staying stiff, but of course when they lay her down, her like lower
has to
bend around. Whatever.
I have a note here that says Riker is hot, but he's better with the beard.
Yes.
Ooh, I was surprised at how sexy I thought he was. Without the beard.
He looks funny without a beard.
I always thought that. And, like, I especially thought that because the last time I saw him without the beard was when I watched...
Well, he's younger than us now. Now his character...
That's true.
He's, like, 5 years younger than us.
He's, like, 35.
Fuck that.
Maybe even younger. It might be, like, 32 or something because he was like, I want to be captain by the time I'm 35.
That's right.
When Picard, like, says, like, welcomes him to the Enterprise, he, like, smiles and he's all, like, dashing and cute at the same time. Yeah. He kind of actually looks like Wesley when he does that, which is weird.
I thought it was hot.
Maybe he's Wesley's real dad.
Maybe. That should have been.
I thought it was some sexy shit. Wait. When he was just talking to Beverly Crusher.
I was just about to ask.
Yeah.
How old do you think she... How old was she supposed to be?
Ooh, well, she had... How old was Wesley?
15, 14.
So she had to be... I mean, she had to be over 30.
Wesley's pretty old now, right? He's like...
He's 47. He's the same age now that Patrick Stewart was when he started TNG.
He's the same age as Barack Obama when he was elected president.
Yeah, 47. We're still young. We're still younger than that.
So wait, what were you saying about the scene where Riker was talking to Gates McFadden and said...
Yeah, like when they're on the Farpoint station, I thought there was some like, you know, there's some sexual tension, but she
was... Oh yeah, it did seem like that.
I thought she was shooting him down, but he was like, hey man, I can get anybody.
You know, I tend to agree. I don't think that was the intention, but I think the natural vibe was Riker is like, here is a rational request. But the way I'm conveying it is I'm opening up the channel for sexual congress.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Crusher was like,
No.
Hold your horses. We're not even on the fucking ship yet, dude.
Just give
it a bit.
I've heard about you.
And he wasn't even saying that, though.
Anyway, right, I think she likes some older
meat. Oh, she likes Picard.
Yeah,
and I think in general. She likes Picard. She likes the Trill guy. She likes the ghost.
Oh, yeah. She's into that. Oh, yeah, the ghost was hundreds of years old, right?
And it's basically probably the worst episode of TNG.
I was watching that. How old were we when that came out, do you think?
14, 13?
13?
Yeah, because that was late.
It was season 7,
yeah,
right?
It was probably 94.
There was some bad season 7
I think
episodes.
I remember. I just remember watching that, and I was like, when she's having her scene, I was like, I was watching with my mom. I was like, what's happening?
Having her scene? You mean the orgasm?
Yeah, so
the
orgasm? I was like, what's happening? And my mom's like,
oh, the candle.
My mom's like, she's feeling very passionate right now.
She's feeling, that's a good way to explain it.
I had no idea what a woman orgasm.
You were 13.
I probably should have known something about it. Yeah,
by then it might have meant your mom did you a disservice.
Yeah, see, you would have, your whole life would have been different if your mom had just said, she just came.
Oh, man.
Your whole life would have been gone in a totally different direction. Oh. And you'd be like, came? What's
it's called,
that, mom?
It's called coming.
That statement bummed me out twice.
It's when a woman's vagina gets very excited, Dan.
That lady was getting fucked.
Yeah, she was getting fucked.
Dan.
Yeah, Dan.
Yep.
That's always a weird conversation to have with mom. Like, I don't even like being in when I was that age. Like, now I guess I still probably wouldn't. You know, but like at that age, like, you definitely don't want to be in a like the same room as your parents when like an R-rated scene's happening.
We got it. Daniel is now matured to the point where he's happy to talk about sex with his mom.
I'm saying back to
Encounter at Farpoint. One thing I thought was interesting was the guy who Grappler Zorn.
Grappler Zorn.
Which, first of all, I was like, until later in the episode, I was wondering. Is Grappler like a title or his first name?
Right.
It turns out it must be a title, but when they were first using it, it sounded more like it was a first name.
Kind of like Darth Vader. Obi-Wan called him Darth, which was maybe on purpose, but I didn't get till later that it was Vader. Anyways,
Grappler Zorn. Yeah. But he looked to me, at least from certain angles, he looked a lot like an older Will Forte.
He reminded me a little bit of that Emo Phillips guy too, like a little bit.
Oh yeah, a little bit. And that actor, of course, he's been in a lot of other stuff.
He did some like voice acting. He did like some Transformers or G.I. Joe. I think he did G.I. Joe.
Oh, the Zorn guy?
Yeah.
Grappler Zorn. My name is Groppler. Groppler Zorn.
Groppler Zorn.
Groppler Zorn. Groppler Zorn. Yeah, so...
A lot of people in TNG were, you know, like...
Named Groppler
sort
Zorn.
Sort of like, you know, staple TV actors.
Yeah, there were a lot of... Did you ever see that...
They're on, like, Falcon's Crest and shit like that.
Did you ever see that Gargoyles show?
Oh, hell yeah. That was all TNG.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever see that, Jesse? You had to have seen that.
Gargoyles?
Yeah.
That was a tight... Did you ever see that, Dan?
I never saw
that.
They
keep talking about making a movie version of
it. It was a good show. It was a cartoon. It was like one of them serious cartoons.
Commander Riker.
About like a team of like a bunch of different gargoyles with
Counselor
their own personalities.
Troy.
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean, basically, almost everyone on TNG had, if not a starring role, then a supporting or guest role on that show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this was a cartoon?
It was a cartoon about gargoyles.
Yeah.
Like they come alive at night and they like, you know, protect New York or whatever.
It's kind of serious in the way like the X-Men cartoon is serious, where it's fun, but it's also serious, you know.
So it's still fun.
Yeah.
It's worth checking out.
It's probably
like
an early teen show, maybe. I don't know. But it's still watchable now.
Early
I
teens.
I don't know, man.
Early teens.
Like Wesley Crusher. Okay, so another thing that I thought was funny was the music was trippy throughout, but there were a few parts where it was all like extra like synthy and clinky and clanky.
There was one part where it was like or something like that, I think. But it reminded me of Karateka on my Apple II Plus. Like the game was like
Okay. And then another example of the weird music is, remember there's that scene with Picard where they start playing the TNG theme music just like in the middle of the episode?
It's kind of out of place. It's not an epic moment.
Yeah, they like go through like too much of it, like of too much of the piece. Yes. Like, they keep going. Right?
And any of the piece is already weird, but you could chalk that up to just that they never did that later, so we're just not used to it. But I agree.
What was the point where they did that? It was sort of like
I think Picard was like on the battle bridge at that point or something?
Was it the separation?
Once the separation happened is when they did it?
Was it just that part?
It went on for a while.
It was kind of like in the cage when they start going like at like warp speed and they start playing the theme again. And
yeah,
all
yeah.
That's right.
It's all bizarre.
You're right. It's exactly like that.
It reminded me of that.
Yeah. Huh. And it was strange. And then speaking of TOS, there was that part towards the end of the episode where they do the TOS cue. There's like the, mm-hmm, you know, the, mm-hmm, the TOS like theme music cue.
Yeah.
Is played, but it's not like the full theme. It's just like
a couple cues from it. Yeah, the leitmotif.
Oh, you're gonna love that leitmotif.
When they were in the courtroom, there was a problem with the camera. I don't know if they did it on purpose, but there was a shadow.
The shadow thing was weird.
That was weird. Yeah. And it was also weird that when they came back to the battle bridge, like O'Brien's like the only loser that wasn't like invited to the court scene.
Yeah,
like,
I know,
he was,
right?
Like there was no
he's just
other
like, hey,
even,
guys.
Yeah,
and he had no idea what was going on.
He had no
on.
Idea.
Yeah,
there weren't
right.
even like there weren't even like extras in there. Anything.
He didn't have a
like,
name he was, yet. Yeah. He wasn't even O'Brien.
But it's cool to see him right from the beginning. I remember that, but I mean,
that was a continuity thing because I remember when I watching All Good Things years later, I couldn't remember. I was like, was O'Brien even on Encounter at Farpoint? I couldn't even remember him being there. And I'm like, oh yeah, of course, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't really speak except for that one scene, I think. And when he was just like, so, are we doing this or what? And everyone else is like weirded out.
Yeah, but but he was around. He was around there.
Yeah,
but
he was
okay, here's the thing that I kept trying to look for, and this is what I went into the episode looking for. You know, in Generations where, you know, Data gets the emotion chip and he all of a sudden gets the joke that apparently Geordi told during the Farpoint mission?
Yes. Oh, I totally
forgot. There's no joke.
Where he says...
There's no joke.
But, you know, yeah. Well, I know that it wasn't in the episode, but I was trying to find out, well, maybe off screen, at what point would this joke have been told? Because there's like, you know, the clown can stay, but the... Because
that Geordi's always clowning around.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
When he's not doing Me Too style shenanigans against various women across the galaxy.
Well, because there was
women under his command.
Well, because they brought it up and he says like, oh my God, I get it. Because he starts laughing. He's like, when you said the clown can stay, but the Ferengi and the gorilla suit has to go. Ha ha. You know, he's like, I get it. Ha ha. And I'm like, and I'm watching this whole episode. Like, when did he make that joke?
That joke never happened.
That was bullshit.
And they, I don't think Data and Geordi ever really interacted that episode.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
It was all Riker and Data.
Yeah.
Like, and there were no points of the episode that called for levity.
Yeah.
Given the situation that Geordi faced.
Yeah. Yeah. Where?
Yeah. The closest thing to a joke was when Riker told him, like, called him Pinocchio or whatever.
Right.
And then Data was like, intriguing.
He was like, fuck you, racist piece of shit.
Yeah.
White piece of fucking shit from Alaska. Jesus.
Oh, right. It's from Alaska.
And I think that doesn't Data actually say, you were on the bridge, you made a joke, I just get it. So it had to have been, so I can probably like, I'm going to watch that scene from Generations again. I'm really hung up on this.
Well, I got to say another thing that, you know, obviously it's the first episode, and particularly in this area of television, the characters are not as well thought out. I think these days, yes, actors and writers have to grow into characters for TV shows, but I don't know if the process is different, if people just have more tools available, if it's just the nature of TV production now. It seems like they hit the ball, you know, hit the ground running better, like in this era. Like,
yeah,
characters are more fully developed, like in the first episode.
You mean nowadays?
Nowadays, right. Yeah. Back then, it was more forgivable. So obviously, there are some differences with Picard, Riker. Mm-hmm. Everyone's characterized a little different. But it is funny sometimes to think about which direction people ended up going, because Geordi here, and Geordi for a lot of the first season, he's presented as he's like a smooth guy. He's comfortable, gets along with people, and then they sort of morph him later into this. Can't talk to women he likes without being weird. He talks about how nerdy he is, and like he's not good with women because he wants to read like engineering manuals. But in this episode, he's just chilling and relaxing, and like,
yeah, he's a cool brother.
Well,
no, but he is.
And he wasn't like chief engineer yet.
I mean, Riker still did kind of treat him like a bitch though. Like
Geordi was chill about it.
He was chill about it. Yeah, he was.
Well, because but then you know what? In fairness, I saw that too, and I thought, you know what? I bet if the shoe was on the other foot and Geordi had done that to Riker and he said, hey, am I addressing you or not? It wasn't that weird making him to be a bitch. It was more like, I'm your commanding officer and you're being a little too informal. Yeah. I don't think it necessarily was to make the guy seem like a bitch.
I mean, I guess it's to establish, and like, also, these new people have like control.
Yeah, and Picard did that with Riker too.
Yeah,
I mean, Picard was busting Riker's balls.
Well, Picard was
too.
Doing it with, I have the note about what was really sort of off-putting was how they portrayed Worf, because Worf, the entire episode, is sort of like, it's like almost upset. I have a note here that says, don't show this to the incels because they'll be enraged, because Worf is completely emasculated the entire time.
Yes. And that goes with, like, isn't there that, there's that YouTube video that shows all those clips of Worf, like where people, like Worf makes a suggestion and everyone's like, nah, we're not going to do that, Worf. But like, it happens like when Q appears on the view screen and Worf stands up with the phaser and is like going to shoot the view screen.
Yeah.
And we're all like, why would he do that? And even Picard's like, why would you do that?
Are you going to shoot?
Worf is all like, I will learn to do better, sir.
Yeah. And that kind of establishes, I guess, Worf's character until like near the end when we finally realize, oh, he is a badass that can kick people's ass.
Well, and the other thing is even in that clip, in that, you know, those clip highlights that you show here, he is like, it's weird. On the one hand, Roddenberry was like, we want a Klingon on the bridge. But then it was like, but we want to make him not like, he want to make him a, kind of like a wimp.
Yeah.
Not a wimp. Obviously, he's big and strong and all that, but attitudinally, he's presented as very passive and weird, you know, and not very bright. They correct that pretty soon.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, especially once Tasha Yar goes away and he gets more of a role, where even if they don't go with his plan, often it turns out his plan A would have probably worked better.
Yeah.
Or B, but they still show him as being like, aha, I'm proud of my choice. You know, I'm not gonna like be like, I'm playing.
Yeah, there's
I'll
only
try to do better.
I think there was only one time where I thought that like Worf was wrong, was when, because I just watched Inner Light again, where he's like, a captain is under attack, we must destroy the probe, you know. But all the other times you see him like, look, if they had just done what Worf's suggested 20 minutes ago, none of this would be happening. You know, so there really is a lot of that goes on. And that's, you know, I guess that's changed in Deep Space Nine.
I like this note. I said, I wrote down, Groppler Zorn, Crumbopulous Michaels.
What's that? I don't get it.
It's just impulsive.
This from Rick and Morty.
Oh,
Crumbopulous Michaels.
I just love killing things.
Yeah, here I go killing again. But the village, the Far Point station and the village next to it, what's really hilarious is the village is so clearly a model, and not even just a model, it's like a tiny model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when they like blow it up,
they're shot in the same exact place over and over.
These like little pieces of wood that are like very clearly like these little buildings are like 4 inches high, if that. They might be shorter.
Yeah. Well, don't they come back at one point? It's like they're still under attack, and it's the exact same spot that's being shot at.
Yes.
Like the same stock footage or
and whatever those aliens, those space squids or whatever they were supposed to be, like
jellyfish.
That's what I meant to say. Squids. Not squids. That's fucking. I'm sorry. That's fucking stupid. Wrong with you, Dan? Why did you say that?
Damn, we're gonna have to punish him.
But those things were supposed to be giant as fuck, right? Like,
yeah,
they dwarfed the Enterprise, but they were moving in that way where giant things aren't supposed to move that twitchy.
Yeah.
Like they had the little hair hairs on their legs. They were all like wisping in the wind or some shit in space, and then their tentacles were moving too quickly. Like big things like that are supposed to be like looking like they're all moving slow, even though they're really fast. Station. They look like they're moving slow.
It was the whole station, so it was huge.
And it was huge, right? And so they didn't do the scale movement, right? It's kind of but it made it look like a small thing that they made big is all.
And the thing is, I agree. That's you can forgive that because you say okay, special effects limitations. What you cannot forgive is when the helmsman or the ops operator, you know, when the second one shows up at the planet, right? It shows up and it's like right next to the Enterprise D.
Yeah,
and then the con officer or whoever was like, Captain, it's 12 times our volume.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you look at it and you're like, that's way fucking more than 12 times. That ship is like this big. This is like 100 times.
Yeah.
Why are you lowballing it, dude?
Yeah, right. You can impress 12 us more.
Times.
They should have better sensors.
It's 12 times. Oh, speaking of sensors, remember when Geordi is giving his little talk about, you know, Crusher is like, you've been blind, you know, your whole life. He's like, yes, I was born this way, which means the same thing. But I forget exactly what leads up to it, but then Geordi responds by saying, you know, I use my other sensors.
Yeah.
That was weird. I didn't get that. Yeah.
Better,
I didn't
know what or something. He's talking about his senses. Like here he's referring in that sense, in that moment, he's referring to like, you know, he can't see, so his ears and his feeling and taste or whatever are better. And he refers to those feelings as sensors.
Maybe that's the way they call it.
I think it's Gene Roddenberry being a fucking asshole because
you think so. Well,
there's Gene Roddenberry's fingerprints, good and bad, are all over this episode.
Because Spock was always like sensors.
Well, was it the sensors? Was that also the reason why he would get headaches or feel pain or whatever? That's something they never like followed up on. Is like they
mentioned it a couple times?
They mentioned it like
he has headache. Well, yeah,
in that same episode.
No, in the future. In the future.
Where he talks to Crusher about it, and at times
every now and then it's like an offhand comment.
So that was like an expositional thing too, I guess, to establish.
But they didn't really do much with it.
So wait, why was he feeling pain? Was because of the senses and the sensors working together, like causing like a disconnect.
It was just senses.
He just implied that like the
technology caused him pain.
Causes headaches.
But he wants it so bad that he's willing to put up with it.
Well, yeah, and like they could give him pain pills, but that would make him not as sharp at his job, and you know.
Speaking of pain pills, man, Troy is I actually am a fan of Deanna Troi.
Yeah.
The characterization and the acting and the writing of Troi is tricky.
It's like when she sensed he's frozen.
Yeah. Pain.
Yeah. Pain.
Pain.
Terrible pain.
Loneliness.
Satisfaction. Great satisfaction.
Oh, and by the way, when she senses like Q's power, she like couldn't. She's just like, oh, it's, you know, it's beyond powerful. It's, you know.
Yeah, right. It's all casual.
And none of that's against Marina Sirtis.
No,
Sirtis or,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's fantastic. And I really like a lot of what happens. I know, you know, there's points where you can get a little annoyed with Troi. But like in this episode, it's bad. Conversely, Wesley is not a problem. I've never had a big problem with Wesley to begin with. I've always thought that was like a little bit overblown.
Right.
But I bought into it more when I was younger. I think I was more annoyed with him when I was younger, which is probably this problem.
You were jealous.
It probably counts as ironic because I think they put the character of Wesley on the ship to attract young viewers. Yeah.
But annoyed them.
I think it annoyed them because, as you said, you either get jealous.
Yeah,
or,
you're like, why do they get to hang out with Captain Picard?
And also, it's just...
I'm cooler than that guy.
It's difficult to describe to people who weren't raised with 80s-style storytelling.
Yeah.
But the idea... Of a young kid,
being
on the bridge of a starship, totally fine in the 80s. Doesn't make any sense in the 70s or in the 90s.
Ludicrous. There was like the movie The Explorers, where there was a bunch of kids like Ethan Hawke and shit. And they go to space. Then there was the one where the Last Starfighter, where he plays a video game, Space Camp,
or the Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah, there was a whole slew of those shits about
or the Last Starfighter.
Just like sort of a plucky kid who's like good at stuff. But the thing is Wesley, I think he rarely was bad at all, but in this episode in particular, in Encounter at Farpoint, he really is not bad at all.
No, he's
every
fine.
Single thing he does is perfectly reasonable and perfectly rational for a 14-year-old young man.
Yeah.
I like it when he's sitting in the captain's seat and then like something comes in and he's like blah 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 and his mom's like Wesley and he's like and then like Picard's like children off the bridge and like
yeah if anything Picard is the unreasonable one.
Oh, he's completely yeah,
it's pretty funny though when she's like,
he's like
just
my
like he
son,
said it was
yeah my son just tried to tell you that yeah.
Well, he does apologize for it, like, I'm sorry for bringing your
oh, by the way, the whole like, you know, and it's one of those examples of something that like we know it for so long that we don't think about it, but I tried to watch this with fresh eyes. I'm putting myself in the place of somebody in 1987 watching this. And I'm like, how dark is it that it's like, how do you know Captain Picard? He brought my father's dead body
His body.
Yeah.
To my house.
They play that music, though, when they're talking. And it's all like, it's like the music. It's similar to the music they play in like Arrested Development between like Buster and Oscar.
When that scene is happening?
These guys are. That's his son. That's his dad.
Oh. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Back at Troy, though, like, and I know this has been brought up, but like, since we're at the beginning of Picard's sort of role on the ship here, how is it ever established that she gets to sit on the left-hand side of the captain on the other side of his number one? Like, what I always was, before I rewatched this, I was like, wait, maybe he like, you know, was like really wanted this counselor, like it was his choice. He's like, yeah, I'm just going to have this because I feel really comfortable.
She can sense stuff. She can sense things.
Yeah, but like, so, right, but like.
Nah, he liked the big tits. So, British dudes like girls with big boobs.
Wait, so.
God bless them.
So.
It's a stereotype, but it's true.
Some of those chicks had some really big
wait
boobs.
A second.
Yeah.
Let me just finish this thought here.
That's some true shit.
Like, so originally I thought like he put her next to him because he personally asked for her there, which is kind of weird to begin with. But no, because it began with him on the ship. It doesn't talk about why she's there. So I think the implication is that Starfleet would have put her there. Right? Yeah. Like, I don't know. Why would Starfleet put her there? Because she has no role in the
brief.
This is Roddenberry. It's another example of Roddenberry.
She might have wanted an empath there, though.
No, but it never, that's what I would have thought. But in that episode, it never expressed him saying, he's new to the ship.
You're talking about Troy.
But he would have had.
They're an exploration ship.
I think that Starfleet put her there, and she has no role in the chain
of
command.
She's good with the aliens.
But before he went on,
he would have arranged for his senior staff.
He would have, like, already had say in who was going to be there.
That would be standard procedure.
Then you would have think they would have gone a little bit more into that than as assuming somebody who has no role in the military is like suddenly like on the bridge with the rest of the people who went to Starfleet.
He knows who Riker is. He knows who all his people are. And
she's a lieutenant commander.
Although he acted weird around Crusher. He's like, what do you mean you requested this assignment? That was incongruous.
That didn't make sense. Yeah.
Well, he didn't know Riker. He was the first time he selected him.
But he had
you don't
wanted
get assigned
to...
that. You know, the flag officer, well, maybe he's not a flag officer, but you know, a high-ranking officer with that will have some choice in who he gets
to
select.
And do they mention... The previous captain that he had worked with, that Riker had worked with, is that the same guy that shows up later, the guy from Shawshank Redemption?
No.
Is that a different
guy? I think it's a different one.
Okay,
although it's hard because I know the line you're talking about, but I remember it being a little difficult to parse whether he was talking
about... DeSoto?
Yeah,
Captain DeSoto.
Yeah, was he talking about the... Because I think that was the current captain of the Hood.
Oh.
But the way he's phrased it, it could also be like it's just some other captain that also worked with Riker.
But was it the same... was it the same character that they shows up later on the
No, no, it's a different name, as I recall.
Oh, okay.
DeSoto is a different.
Oh, name. And then never mind. The Shawshank Redemption one was
that's the Pegasus.
That was the. I'm thinking of somebody different because, like, I'm thinking of the episode where O'Brien, my wires get crossed. Where
oh
O'Brien,
yeah, yeah, you're thinking of the O'Brien one.
I'm just saying. Okay, yeah. I'm just saying. I know she has empathic powers, which is why she would be advantageous. I just don't think it makes sense in a star military situation.
Not
with a chain of command.
Well, I think
not
it does.
Military.
Not in the military, though, because
yeah, it does
have,
in a military.
Because you have people around you that are like part of the chain of command.
But she can sense people's true.
No, I know that's the advantage, but I'm saying it doesn't make sense when she's not doesn't have a military role. She doesn't. She never went through any training.
There's a lot
she
of non-military stuff and stuff.
She didn't. There's no implication that she didn't go through training.
She's not part of the chain of command. She has no role.
Well, no, she's a commander.
She's got a rank. She's lieutenant commander.
Yeah.
Later on, she is.
Later on.
No, no, no. In this one, they refer to. In fact, I think they refer to her as
she's
commander.
She's sitting on the bridge. You don't just get to sit on the bridge.
She's just there's
they
a
let
difference.
Fucking Wesley on the
None
bridge.
Of us. We. Yet.
That's why I'm saying it didn't make any sense. So why did they just let her sit on the bridge? No,
the doctor doesn't sit, even get to go on the bridge.
That's like, why it doesn't make. That's ranking. Why I'm saying it doesn't make sense because
well,
she has no rank.
Okay. Yeah, but there's two things. There's two.
And she gets to wear a different uniform.
Two things. First of all,
that's for a different reason.
Not arguing with any of your points. All your points are perfectly valid. Except for, save for the concept of you don't have to be in the chain of command to necessarily be like
on
you know, hanging out on the bridge. You can still be useful. And you can still be a commander. You can be a captain and not be in the chain of command
still,
for the
I
ship. You can be the captain of engineering.
There's a bunch of people on that ship that are like...
In the ship.
Outrank like main characters.
Yeah.
And they're just regular...
Honestly, they're like the head of astrobiology.
I can't imagine a situation knowing the characters... You know, as well as you do from seeing the show, I can't imagine a scenario where Captain Picard wouldn't be giving a brief about who he's going to be working with when he takes over the Enterprise and not say, you know what, my right side, on my left side, I want to have the woman with the empathic power.
Because she's got huge, huge breasts.
No, because
she's Greek,
because
but she's
it's
got
such
British
a great advantage in
breasts.
Every situation. In every situation you possibly be in, whether it's military, whether it's diplomatic.
I'm not arguing her potential usefulness. I just want to make that clear. That was never on the
right.
table. I never argued the
but
question of that.
Just that alone would be enough reason for Picard to go out of his way to...
It just seems highly irregular to me. That's
okay,
all.
Right on.
Pain.
Right on. It's, no.
Pain. Hey, man, I'm not... No, I'm
That's
not...
what makes it, like, the next generation.
Exactly. Okay. It's irregular for us. Us and our time.
It's
no,
the future.
Okay, but
the
for,
future,
for real,
dude.
Real talk, guys.
Real talk, real
Getting
talk.
Down to real talk.
For real.
This is the Roddenberry aspect. Because this is... We have to talk about... I think we all agree this was an entertaining episode. It's not a terrible episode.
No.
It's a little uneven. There's... et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But...
That was the best.
But it a does... It does lay the foundation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a faulty foundation that they have to correct later. And I think that's one way you judge the pilots. I think one thing we had in TOS was that with the cage and with Where No Man Goes Has Gone Before, there's an evolution between the two. They make some significant changes. Mm-hmm. But Where No Man Has Gone Before, except for some additional minor changes, it pretty much laid the foundation very clearly for TOS and the rest of Trek. Encounter at Farpoint, one reason why I think you can argue it's not fully successful and that it's flawed is that they had to change direction for a lot of these characters and in a more significant way.
And how they work together.
Yeah.
In
Data's using contractions, for example.
Oh, is he?
He uses a couple. He says we're.
Oh. That
at one point.
James R. Kirk.
Yes, James R. Kirk.
You made fun of me about that last time.
James R. Kirk? Wait, who says James R. Kirk?
James on the tombstone for when...
It does say that. And doesn't it have the years are all fucked up, too?
So why I keep saying the Roddenberry fingerprints
unacceptable.
Is because... And I respect Roddenberry. He did a great job. But one thing he did when he envisioned the next generation, partly as a reaction to his disappointment with Star Trek II, and three, you know, he didn't like how militaristic it had gone. Mm. He tried to revert. Oh. He wanted to go and develop. And this is well known that he, everybody in the fandom knows this, that he decided he wanted to go in a different direction and have everyone be peaceful. No, there could be no interpersonal conflict on the
crew. I remember that. That was a pain in the ass for the writers.
It was a huge pain. And you can see it here because what... And they changed that. Once they pushed him out, basically starting in season three especially, you see a clear change in the stories and characterization.
Like, he would have hated DS9, basically.
He would have probably had difficulties with DS9.
But, you know, but also, he kind of struck lightning twice with just coming up with the characters of Picard, Data.
He knows how to tell a story. And people forget how many other shows he did. A lot of other shows, you know?
Yeah, because, as much as I love Deep Space Nine, I do kind of think, like, if he had been around, he could have maybe, like, come up with a couple good ideas.
He would have fucked it up.
You think so?
He was too old. Because, here's the thing. Roddenberry was a genius in many ways, but he wasn't perfect. He added shit to the TOS, like the edict symbol and stuff, like, specifically to sell merchandise.
Okay.
He was a womanizer, and while he liked, he created many powerful female characters, he also did some things that were not necessarily so great.
Right.
He knew, like, L. Ron
I just
Hubbard.
Meant when the doldrums of, like, Voyager came around, and, like, you know, when Enterprise is around.
I'll take your point there, and we'll get to Voyager and Enterprise soon.
Deep Space Nine's great, and I love First Contact, and there's stuff going on.
Your point, though, is that one of the problems in Voyager and Enterprise is the character creation.
Yeah, it didn't have a moment of genius that other than professional writers could come in and make work.
In TNG, they still had to change the character. Like you said, you usually don't go back and watch Encounter at Farpoint.
I don't. Yeah,
and in fact, a lot of people don't even bother much with season one or two, which is a shame because there are some good character moments along the way. The problem is some of them are in boring or problematic episodes.
Yeah,
but that. 30-second scene maybe between Data and Geordi is, like, worth seeing.
Oh, totally.
You just have to sort of pick it, root through to pick it up.
Well, I thought some of the special effects were pretty good, but then that whole, like, when the whole cage in outer space that's, like, keeping the Enterprise in, I thought that was hokey as shit.
So, yeah, that cage. So that was like a force
Hughes
field.
Cage.
It's like a net.
Yeah, I swear there was an episode where that cage was made up of a bunch of John DeLanceys. Was there an episode where that mesh-looking thing was actually just a bunch of John DeLanceys, like, standing next to each other to form a chain-link, like, space cage?
I think you had a terrible dream.
There's not, like...
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no episode.
I was waiting for Patrick to come in and say, oh, yeah, that was then.
I was thinking that it was this episode. I was like, oh, there's that force field. There's going to be a bunch of John DeLanceys, like, spread equal, like hand in hand and foot in hand and all that shit, like forming a, like, big force field.
Both of John DeLancey's parents were oboists in the Philadelphia Symphony.
Well, then that's why.
Well, then
I like John DeLancey, even though
he's
played that. He played that rapist I always want to say, "Don't tell Mom the babysitter's dead," but it's not that. It's the what's that fucking movie? You know the one.
My stepmother's an alien.
Is it Breaking Bad?
No, he plays the gynecologist.
He isn't Breaking Bad.
And he assaults a woman.
I can't.
It's really creepy.
I.
God, why can't I remember it? It's not even a good movie.
You
don't have to. You don't have to remember things that are not good.
I feel like I'm failing because that's the kind of thing I want to
say.
Know.
The babysitter.
Too bad none of us have any means to figure it out.
Yeah, we do have. We can look shit up.
Looking shit up is.
It's for the lamoids.
For real.
Well,
it is for the lamoids.
John DeLancey. He was in The Fisher King. He had a small role in that.
Yeah.
He was a small, very small role in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, Breaking Bad. He's always great.
But he's a very, very good actor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he can go toe to toe. People kind of take that for granted because he does go toe to toe with Patrick Stewart.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. I like the end part where, like, Patrick Stewart, Picard's all, like, in awe over these beings, like, going off. He's like, ha, ha, ha. And then he turns around, immediately gets this scowl and, like, looks all annoyed and pissed off at Q and does his usual, like, get off my ship, bah. You know?
Yeah.
And when they're talking to each other, like, Q and Patrick Stewart, I just think, like, Q and Patrick Stewart. John DeLancey and Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
It just feels like, John DeLancey and Patrick, it feels like their characters talking to each other, but I also think it feels like they're, like, acting at each other, you know.
They are. They're trying to out act each other.
They're it's really
like when you see Magneto, Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
When you see those two, you're like, those are two great fucking actors.
Yeah, there you go.
Those two are fucking masters.
Okay.
I'm changing franchises.
Just a couple things I wanna toss out there. First of all, what the fuck was Groppler Zorn thinking, like, inviting the Federation to come, like, rent his alien torture station. You know, that's ridiculous.
Wouldn't they have figured it out? Yeah, right. And
it's
he
like,
just,
where are these apples coming from?
And then he started, like, make the money and get out of there?
And then he started, like, threatening to go off with the Ferengi as, like, a...
Yeah.
But, yeah, and the apple
it
thing...
I was thinking about it. It would have made sense. The Ferengi would not have given a shit that he was torturing an alien. They would have thought that was great. Why didn't he go to the Ferengi and get a pure deal?
And then he had this alien that was, like, trying to be, like, you know, mischievous by being really generous and courteous to people. Like, it's like, stop doing that.
Well, okay.
And Riker was a total asshole, by the way, when he was like, he's some fruit. And Riker's like, you got any apples?
Yeah,
and he's like,
I know.
No. And he's like, oh, okay.
That was bad writing.
Like, yeah,
that's
like,
bad writing.
You could have shoved a banana down.
I was going to, yeah, exactly. Or just declined. He didn't have to make a big deal about fucking apples, you piece of shit.
Yeah, right.
We're in the middle. Like, okay.
I'm sorry.
From planet Earth. We fucking apples.
So the station is called Farpoint, which is, by the way, a little too on the nose because they're like, we're going farther than we've ever been before.
Even the name is mysterious.
And then you get to the station farther than anyone's been before.
Farpoint.
And then you get pissed off because they've only got apples and like pineapples and shit. You can't. They don't have an apple.
You don't have any apples.
They had a banana. They had the fucking banana.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was bad business. And and that brings up another Roddenberry thing that I think is so, like, his style of storytelling that he really wanted to push. That I don't think is a bad form of storytelling. I think he just wasn't able to pull it off.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Japanese, like a Miyazaki style storytelling where you don't have any true antagonists, where any antagonist in the story, it turns out it was just a miscommunication or like a different perspective, you know, and you see that all the time in Miyazaki films. There's never a bad guy. It always turns out that,
there wasn't a villain really.
No, there never is.
He's kind of an asshole, but he wasn't really a villain.
And throughout the first couple seasons of TNG, it's not that there are no villains, but they're always portrayed much more. It's not as stark as TOS, where it's just like, those are the bad guys.
Mm. Yeah.
And this is why it's very obvious they're the bad guys. It always turns out like, blah, blah, blah.
The 90s and the late 80s.
With Zorn, he was kind of a bad dude.
He was an asshole. You know.
He was a dick, but he wasn't really a villain.
But also, you saw him as he was sort of weak.
He didn't understand.
Yeah, he was weak.
And you saw their village. Like, they didn't make their village look nice. They made their village look like shit.
Do you think he
like, okay, like, I understand why these people don't want to live like that anymore.
Do you think he just could have been just a moron?
It's like people making bad
decisions. You can't explain.
He lucked into some alien shit.
He thought, well, let's make some money off this.
Yeah.
How did they capture that thing?
If he knew about the Ferengis, why didn't he go to them in the first place?
I don't know how they captured that thing.
If all he cared about was money, that it just, you know.
No, he pulled the Ferengi shit out of his ass.
Is that what it was?
He was like, I didn't. I just said that shit. I haven't been talking to Ferengi.
But he could have called them, and they would have liked that if he knew who they were. You know what I mean? That's the whole point. Why would he, like Patrick's original point, why would he be dealing with the Federation in the first place? Because he knows they have, like, prime directives.
The Klingons, the Ferengi, the Romulans.
The fucking Romulans.
The Romulans would have had a lot less issues.
Those guys suck,
so
dude.
There was really only one, like, theme, and it wasn't, like, a moral or anything like that I saw. And the theme was about converting energy to matter. Because that was, like, he was like, oh, the aliens, they convert energy to matter. That's what they do, just like our transporters.
And the holodeck.
And in the holodeck, they were talking about, well, it's not so strange we can make the holodeck. The transporter can produce real things. These are real, just like the transporter.
Yeah, because if they can rematerialize a human, it's easy to materialize a rock.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And then the aliens were like, oh, these aliens produce matter from... The whole episode, the only theme I really saw is the theme of producing matter from energy.
Sort of what the show did.
Yeah.
You took the energy of Gene Roddenberry and turned it into like a solid...
Energy of imagination.
Energy of imagination turned into a solid thing that we're talking about
energy.
30 years later.
It's true.
32 years later.
And how about those shoulder pads on Crusher?
That was nice. I like that.
32
years later.
Do you ever get sick of hearing the line where someone's like, do this, that's an order?
No.
That's an order.
I always like that.
It's like they do it all the time. They're always like, that's an order. It's like, oh, shit, that is an order.
It's like, yeah, but
I better do this shit.
It's almost like a Jerry Seinfeld bit. Do people in the military forget they're under orders?
Yeah, right.
No, my favorite,
have to be told, that's an order.
My favorite thing is when Q is like, you should attack them, and then Picard's like, don't do what he says.
Right.
It's like, are you have that little faith in your crew that they're going to listen to this lunatic?
Yeah, listen to the captain, yeah.
Oh, okay. So another note I have, I know we referenced it, but I just wrote exposition about how the holodeck works makes Riker look like an idiot Because and it really did, because like the whole like throwing the rock thing and everything.
Yeah, he really talked down to him during that whole scene.
Yeah. A one little minor throwaway was you remember when I know it's back towards the beginning, but when Wesley is walking on the rocks and Riker's like, "No, Wesley, that rock's loose."
And he falls.
That rock is not loose.
No. He obviously
that
just
is
falling
a
over
solid loose. Fucking rock. So Wesley's just like a maniac, or
it almost looked like a school
Riker's
play
kind of
thing. It almost I thought when I saw that that's the kind of thing that's the kind of acting you see in a school play. Like, now fall over, Wesley. Yeah, you know?
Well, how come Riker doesn't know about holodecks? Like,
it's weird. It's a weird thing.
He's like one of the brightest stars.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He's like already super high ranking, but
he's
not
trained
that old.
How to dock
like,
the ship, but he doesn't know.
He can do it manually, but he's
a super
know.
Fucking pilot.
But Q liked Riker. That was the only person Q liked.
I kind of like that. Well, then he comes back and tries to make Riker Q in the next episode.
Oh, that's right.
That's the next, because he has kind of a fascination with Riker.
Gives him those powers.
I'd like to point out that they're the first Skirt Man sighting as at 14 minutes and 38 seconds. 14 minutes, 38 seconds.
It's early on.
That's the first Skirt Man
you
see.
The Skirt Man. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
Skirt Man. What am I missing?
It's like one of the crew members. The when they gave the guys like skirts,
he's got like a skirt uniform.
Yeah, skirt uniform.
Oh, I see. Okay, so
14 minutes 38 seconds.
Good for you.
When you're like enlisted,
you.
Like the officers get the better looking uniforms, and when you're enlisted on the Enterprise, you get like this skirt.
Except if you're Troy, then you get to just skirt because you're Troy.
Well, you know what's funny?
Troy's an officer, and she's got like legs and stuff. So.
Another funny thing was
is she an officer?
When
she's a lieutenant.
I don't know why she was on the bridge.
She's
just really bothered me.
Good to the aliens.
This is remember when Geordi and Troy are like on the planet's surface.
Yeah,
and then they're like, you look over here, and we'll go over here. And Geordi at one point all like looks at Troy, and then like all points, like he's like right over there, and like the way he's pointing is, it's like a condescending point. It's like he's saying, like, are you fucking blind?
Yeah,
we're going this direction.
I'm blind, but I know where to go.
No, I just had one thing that I've been meaning to ask because I didn't catch this, and I didn't feel like going back. When Troy refers to Riker as an Imzadi.
Yeah.
Is that I missed that?
Okay, so that's a thing that
is it like a
lover?
It's like a Padawan.
Your lover.
So you
lover.
Have to. I recommend. There's a book called Imzadi. It's an older Star Trek book. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Sexy.
That goes into their Riker and Troy's background. But the term is meant to imply, and I took note about this because from my perspective now, I'm so familiar with the term, having heard it on the Next Generation, and having read books and other stuff that use that term in relation to that relationship, that it doesn't sound weird to me. But obviously, if you're watching this in 1987, you're like, hey, what the fuck is it, Imzadi?
I took it as
like, is that like a type of car?
I took it as some kind of like sexual Padawan or something like that.
Yeah, it's meant to be like a special bond relationship
That they have.
That's more than boyfriend
sexual
or girlfriend
Padawan.
Or whatever.
But does it imply one has like authoritative or
anal
or a teacher or like sort of not parental? That's weird.
You know, no. Like, I don't think it's a training thing. No. I don't think it's a master student relationship.
That's what I'm. That's
I think it's an
Troy
equal,
has anal master.
I think it's an equal partnership.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Sorry, I fucked everything up.
Fuck you, man.
So
buttons.
You can get rid of me talking about sex with my mom. And
nope.
The butt
fuck. I'm gonna play
it's
twice.
All
no.
So the
fix it in post.
A couple of things also, like, the episode is structured oddly because it's not just the way it's structured, since it's so long.
Yeah,
it's just got a weird, like, the act structure.
A little choppy.
The pacing is a little weird. And the, you know, like the Riker redocking scene.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad scene. I think
it's
just, it goes on too long.
It's sort of.
Because
like,
the idea
right,
is.
Good,
the point they're trying to convey there is Commander
skills.
Riker is like a skill. He is top of his game. He is a high quality. He's not some chump. He knows what he's doing, right? And the way they do that is by having him perform. Just he just follows the rules. He's just like, all right, here's the protocol.
Yeah.
We are now. I'm now voicing the protocol. You know it anyway. The computer could obviously do
and
this.
And also, I didn't understand. Yeah, it's like Picard went out of his way to say, like, you have to do this manually. And it's like, okay, I'll do it manually.
Yeah, it was just a little odd.
It does. I mean, was he just trying to, like, say, like, I'm in charge. You're going to do what
it seems
I say?
Like, I see maybe Picard is trying to size him up or something. I don't know. Or bust his balls. Yeah,
I think he was trying to say, like, look, you do what I fucking say.
Picard had a lot of, I mean, again, they changed him. He's a lot of weird interactions in this episode.
Okay, later on in different season, way down the line, where Picard has to, like, be a ninja on a planet. He has to be a special op on a planet, and they really give him the shaft. And this other captain comes in to take
over. Captain Jellicoe.
Oh, yeah, and he's like kind of a dickhead.
He's a piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit.
Although he's a good captain, he accomplishes what he's supposed to accomplish.
He actually does. He gets it done probably better than Picard
would. But he pulls that same shit. He comes in and tries to tell everyone, like, I'm the boss around here, and Riker doesn't take too kindly to that in that situation. Is it because Riker...
The guy from Robo... Brian... Ronnie Cox? Is that his name?
Is Riker not take to that because he...
Is that guy?
He was in... Beverly Hills Cop and Total Recall.
Bunch of stuff.
Does Riker not take to that? Does Riker not take to that because he's?
That.
Does Riker not take to that because he senses the guy is full of shit? Is that the deal? Or like I don't know, like why doesn't Riker respect the captain in that scenario?
That's a good point.
He respects
actually,
respects Picard in that scenario. I don't know.
Well, you know what?
Maybe it's neither here nor there.
I wonder what did Worf think during Chain of Command? Do you think he was happy as shit? He's like finally a guy who's going to go kill a bunch of people or like threaten to kill people. You know, I mean, do what we have to do. So you think Worf was happy?
I don't know.
But there was sort of like a, you know, I think the main problem the Riker had is that it's like, look, you're not a main character.
Well, they were also.
You're not in the credits.
They were.
That was the, I think you're right.
That's like the only reason I can think
they
of.
They were also concerned about the captain at that time because they're all like weirded out.
Yeah, but they could have been, they could have, you know, I mean, but still, that's still, I mean, I know that you're close with somebody. I don't know. I guess I could go with that.
Yeah, I guess you could manage that. You could go with that if you like.
I'll go with it.
All right. So I think if are there any
major
thoughts? Because then I want to play you guys something. I don't know if you've heard it before or not.
At least we're acquainted with the judge, Captain.
Yeah, that was
like Data being a smartass.
He's like being like a you know a writer on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah, right.
Oh, the person who wrote it, co-wrote it, was this woman who I guess just worked with Gene Roddenberry in the past, right? I looked at who wrote it.
I bet she did.
But, I mean, it was like, it was pure.
Gene Roddenberry,
was this
no
one of,
enemies.
But wasn't this one of the pure Roddenberry writer thing
pure
ones? I mean.
Rod.
Pure Rod.
And I don't know. I believe you though.
Berries.
Yeah, but I think
I mean, when you look at how the jellyfish, not only the characterization of the jellyfish aliens, such as there is, but also the visual style, it's very similar to the motion picture, which was also heavily Roddenberry driven, and also had no enemy. You know, it's all
2001 and again.
Yeah,
yeah, that kind of vibe.
So I think there was a lot
meditative.
Of that.
Yeah.
In Encounter at Farpoint, there's a ton of that.
Yeah.
And then they start easing up on it throughout the first couple seasons. But in some points, very rapidly, they get away from that, which is good.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought that was, you know.
The hand that rocks the cradle?
Yeah. Ha ha. The hand that rocks the cradle. That's actually not a bad movie. It's disturbing, but it's a. You know,
apparently Fisher King, too.
Who's the.
Daniel
Hand that. Yeah, yeah. Fisher King. He was in that. Yeah. Mm. Not a huge part, but, you know, he's pretty good.
All right. Any other thoughts?
I have nothing.
Nothing. That's all my cheeks can flap.
All righty. So
next week is...
Next week will be Star Trek
Deep Space Nine.
Season 1, Episode 1.
Emissary.
That's what I said.
I'll give you a preview. I think it's my favorite of the Star Trek pilots.
Really? Oh, yeah. You know what? It might be mine, too.
Enter my Harry, but
one of the better ones.
It probably is.
It's bizarre and weird, but I think in a pretty good way.
But also, I think the pilot for Voyager isn't bad either, though.
It's not bad, but we'll get to Voyager soon. But my issue with Voyager is they almost abandon the premise the really cool premise they start setting up. They abandon it by like the end of the pilot.
Oh, that's a good point.
Much. All doctors are creepy old men.
Yes, all doctors are creepy old men.
Adam.
When there's says, I'm not joking, Lee.
Yeah, right. I'm not joking, Lee.
Okay, so now before we go, we look forward to talking to everybody next week. It's got Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Emissary. That's going to be fun.
It's got everything.
I think we all dig on that.
Encounter at fart points.
We're done with an encounter at fart points. A flawed but entertaining
thing. Enter my Harry.
But, you know, we talk about, you know, the opening theme, and the opening theme is a variation on what was played in Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jerry Goldsmith.
Yeah, like Jerry Goldsmith and Alexander Courage, I think it's still gets a little credit from some of the cues. But it was not, there were a few variations on what the opening theme might be. And it got at least to these two finalists, the one that we know and are familiar with, and then this one. So I'll just start playing this for you. And then we can talk just for a couple minutes before we sign off about what we think about this.
This was going to be the TNG.
This was an alternative. They decided not to go with it. We're going to decide, was it right? Was it wrong?
Should they have the same composer?
I believe so. Yeah, same team.
It's just a different.
It's very synthy.
It's a different arrangement.
It's the same kind of.
It starts out almost identical.
I don't remember it being so synthy.
The first two seasons, they didn't get an orchestra until season three.
Oh, I didn't know.
Three has all sorts of new magical sounds in it. The whole show.
Sounds like Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, trying to figure out what that sounded like.
And starring
Patrick Stewart
as
a Frenchman.
As Mitch Laser.
And we've got Lieutenant Data
as Dirk Craig.
Brent Spiner.
Spiner.
And introducing
sexy robot.
Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton was famous by the time he was on.
I know, but it'd be funny if they... And introducing...
Oh, he was on some other movies.
Yeah, he was...
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me!
And everybody's favorite, Marina Sirtis. Riker. Oh, God damn it. Riker, played by...
I mean, it's biased because I'm used to what I'm used to, but
that's
I like the other one better.
This sounds fascist to me.
Yeah, it does.
Sounds it's like Starship like Troopers or some shit.
It is, yes, it Starship Troopers.
It has
Troopers.
A much more marchy sort of feel. Like you're going to use it, you're going to, you know, use it in a marching band competition or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's a puzzling arrangement.
It's less wonder. It's more militant and less awe and wonderment.
Would
less
we
wonderment.
Think that if we had heard that for, you know, 32 years?
That's what I was wondering.
That's
but I
think it would be a different show.
Really?
I honestly think that, look, the opening is only a part of everything, of course, and it's not like the writers and the actors are sitting there hearing the opening all the time.
That's what I'm saying.
But there's a flavor to it. And this,
oh, sure.
The opening is supposed to lead into what you expect. And the one we got, I think...
Perfect.
Very good, and gets that vibe of exploration and meditation,
right?
Thinking.
That one is more like Star Trek Galaxy Police.
It's yeah, it is. It's like the Galaxy. That's a great
fucking
Galaxy
more,
Police, the jackbooted thugs, Starfleet thugs stomping.
It's more ominous.
Syndicate.
It is more ominous. That's true.
The stories. Yeah. I think you would expect a different story. I certainly think if you had heard that music and then saw Encounter at Fart Point, you'd be like, "What the
fart point?
What the fuck is this?"
Almost snuck that one by.
No, but it's true. You know what would be interesting is to watch Star Trek: The Next Generation every single episode from the beginning, but
use that
music and you can't skip the intro.
Let's start right.
Somehow like have it like space, and then it has that going on. You know?
Star Trek fascism,
dun, or whatever it was.
Yeah,
I don't know. Would it make you into like a Trump supporter or something if you watch that show with that music?
I think it's quite likely you become a Trump supporter.
Right, you'd be like, man, Trump's doing the right thing. I mean, just listen to that fucking song right there.
Yeah,
I saw. It's exact same dialogue, exact same everything.
He's so triumphant.
Yeah. You're like, you know, hey, man. You guys.
Make it so.
Make it so.
Build the wall.
Make it so. Buzz.
And but, you know, the other thing is that everybody who, like us, who, everybody who, you know, all these Star Trek fans who like Trump now, if you switch it up, they become like Hillary rabid Hillary Clinton supporters.
Is that what happens? So
yeah.
A mirror universe?
Yeah, it's like a mirror universe.
God, we have to do it. We'll have to do a special episode on the whole like right-wing Star Trek fans. No offense to any right-wing Star Trek fans out there listening. We're not big fans of yours.
Well,
FYI.
I mean, I like that they like Star Trek because I follow like the Picard messages on Facebook.
This podcast might not be for
you. And, well, no. I mean, yeah, overall, the podcast might not. But I'm always happy to talk about Star Trek with anybody. I really am.
Yeah.
So it's until,
and I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's, any,
but
it,
as long as you keep it to Star Trek.
How can you be a right-wing Star Trek fan?
I think that's where the confusion comes from. Anyway, we'll have to talk about this another time because it's a long conversation.
I'll have to think about this,
and
too.
And we want to be fair.
That's
we
a whole
be fair.
Other right. story.
It is.
Yeah.
Another story.
Another story in another universe, in a mirror universe.
Another story.
Somewhere where people get confused. It's like in A Clockwork Orange when the main character is reading the Bible and they think, hey, this is great. He's reading the Bible and then you see in his imagination that he doesn't imagine himself as Jesus. He imagined himself as one of the Roman soldiers.
I
sometimes think that's where people misinterpret Star Trek and they're like, oh yeah, this is great, there's a spaceship full of white people imposing their will.
It's almost on but it's almost on the level of, you know, like when Beavis and Butthead see like the guy with the beard in the commercial and they're like, damn, we want to be like him, and they glue beard, you know, like their hair to their face. It's almost on that level of stupidity. It's like you really don't get it. Yeah, damn, it's almost on that level. Or like they go fly their kite out in the storm because they saw the Ben Franklin and they're like, that'd be cool. That guy did cool stuff. It's almost on that level of not analyzing at all what
almost,
you're watching.
Almost. Okay. So
So buttons.
Fart so points. Good night. I think we'll end there.
Oh yeah.
We'll see you next week with Deep Space Nine, the next pilot. It's got Star Trek.
Boom.
Have fun. Have a good evening. Have a good weekend. Have a good week. Work hard. Do good.
Play
do
hard.
Do well. Play hard. Involve yourself in all sorts of activities. Actually, involve yourself in your community. Talk to your family.
No.
Pet your dog.
Be the kind of genitals you want to be.
Yes. Mm. Masturbate frequently for both men and women. Scientific studies have demonstrated, and this is indeed true, that more frequent masturbation is healthy.
I should say, be the kind of genitals that you are and wish to be.
Or wish to be.
All right, good night. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.
How easily humans do that. I still need much practice.
There's some puzzles down on the planet that the captain once answered. He suggested that I take you with me on the away team that I'll be leading.
I shall endeavor to function adequately, sir.
Yes. When the captain suggested you, I looked up your record.
Yes, sir. A wise procedure, sir, always.
Then your rank of lieutenant commander is honorary.
No, sir. Starfleet class of 78, honors in probability mechanics and exobiology.
But your file says that you're a
machine, correct, sir. Does that trouble you?
To be honest, yes, a little.
Understood, sir. Prejudice is very human.
Now, that does trouble me. Do you consider yourself superior to us?
I am superior, sir, in many ways. But I would gladly give it up to be human.
Nice to meet you. Pinocchio. A joke.
Ah. Intriguing.